I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I want to express my gratitude and praise the youths who've made this possible. They have protected this country and given it a rebirth, and we wish for this new Bangladesh to progress with speed.
Nobel Peace Laureate Muhammad Yunus is sworn in as head of Bangladesh's caretaker government just days after student-led protests ousted the prime minister. We'll go to Dhaka. Then, as Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris faces pressure to define her platform on Palestine, we'll speak with Leila Alavit, co-chair of the Uncommitted National Movement, who spoke with Harris in Michigan.
I was thinking of my community members who are losing hundreds of their family members. And I told VP Harris that. I said, Michigan voters right now want a way to support you, but we can't do that without a policy change that saves lives in Gaza right now.
Then press freedom groups express alarm over felony hate crime charges brought against accredited photojournalist Samuel Seligson after New York police claim he filmed pro-Palestinian activists hurling red paint during a protest. We'll speak with Seligson's lawyer.
It is an extremely concerning assault on the First Amendment. The reason why the freedom of press is so strongly protected is because there's some underlying belief that in order for the public to meaningfully participate in a democracy, they must be actually informed.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israel's launched a new offensive on the southern city of Khan Yunis, attacking dozens of sites after warning people to flee, but offering no safe alternative. This is a mother fleeing yet again with her family.
We are running from the fire. We are running with our children from fear.
Where are you going now?
God knows. We are walking now. They said to go to the humanitarian areas, but there is no safe place here in Gaza. It is all destroyed and damaged.
In Gaza City, multiple children were among at least 15 Palestinians killed in more Israeli strikes targeting schools. At least 30 others were wounded.
Netanyahu, children, only God can help us. He was playing at Abd El Fattah school. He is an innocent child. They say we are terrorists. Look at what Netanyahu is doing. Look at the Arab world. Only God can help us.
Amid the mounting death and destruction, leaders of Qatar, Egypt, and the United States have called on Israel and Hamas to return to ceasefire talks. The official death toll in Gaza is nearing 40,000, though the true toll is likely far higher. In election news, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz addressed the United Auto Workers in Wayne, Michigan, Thursday, where they appeared alongside UAW President Sean Fain. The UAWs endorsed the Democratic ticket in the November election. This is Kamala Harris.
And look, even if you're not a member of a union, you better thank unions. Yeah. To say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you to the sisters and brothers of UAW for all you are and all we will do over these next 89 days.
In Florida, Donald Trump held a rambling hour-long news conference from Mar-a-Lago where he attacked Harris and made a number of false claims, including that nobody died after the January 6th Capitol insurrection and that Democrats believe in killing babies.
The Democrats are really the radical ones on this because they're allowed to do abortion on the eighth and ninth month and even after birth.
Despite these comments, Trump downplayed the issue of abortion in the upcoming election. He also claimed he almost went down in a helicopter ride with former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, and that Brown said terrible things about Kamala Harris. Willie Brown quickly refuted those lies. He said he did not fly in a helicopter with Trump. Trump also claimed he had the largest rallies, at one point comparing his January 6th Stop the Steal rally to Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and rally on the National Mall. Also on Thursday, Trump agreed to debate Kamala Harris on ABC News September 10th and called for two additional debates. Harris told reporters she was glad her opponent had finally agreed, adding, quote, hope he shows up. In other campaign news, Kamala Harris's national security adviser, Phil Gordon, denied reports that Harris would consider an arms embargo on Israel. The embargo is a key demand of Palestinian rights defenders. We'll have more on this later in the broadcast with the co-chair of the Uncommitted National Movement, who met with Kamala Harris yesterday. In more election news, the consumer advocate group Public Citizen called out the Federal Election Commission Thursday after the agency announced it will not regulate AI deepfakes in political ads before November. Public Citizen called it a, quote, shameful abrogation of the FEC's responsibilities. The group pointed to a recent post by ex-owner Elon Musk showing an AI-altered image of Kamala Harris. Musk's post was in violation of his company's own rules against posting misinformation without context. In related news, tech giants Microsoft and Palantir announced they're merging their government cloud computing and AI tools to service U.S. military and intelligence agencies. Palantir's clients include ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement, various police departments, and the government of Israel. In Texas, Republican Governor Greg Abbott signed an executive order Thursday requiring hospitals to obtain patients' immigration status. Abbott claims the move would help Texas calculate the cost of providing health care to immigrants. Rights groups slammed Texas's latest attack on immigrant communities, which is likely to face legal challenges. The Border Network of Human Rights in El Paso blasted Abbott for, quote, using immigrants as a scapegoats for his failed policies and political frustrations, unquote. Here in New York, a 63-year-old climate activist and musician was arrested Thursday, now faces up to 7 years in prison, performing a piece by Bach during a protest outside the headquarters of Citibank. John Mark Rosendahl, a professional cellist, was arrested alongside 14 other peaceful protesters who encircled Rosendahl to shield him from the police while he performed in the public plaza. Rosendahl spoke briefly before he started playing Bach's suites for cello.
We're here for freedom of speech. I'm playing music here today because we are taught that the purpose of music is to sober and quiet the mind and make it susceptible to divine influences.
His words were interrupted as his fellow activists urged him to start playing as police approached. The protest was part of the Summer of Heat on Wall Street campaign, which has been targeting Citibank with peaceful demonstrations all summer. Some 500 people have been arrested since the action started. Nobel Peace Laureate Muhammad Yunus has been sworn in as head of Bangladesh's caretaker government just days after the ouster of Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina following weeks of student-led protests. Yunus, a longtime critic of Hasina, took the oath during a ceremony at the presidential palace in the capital Dhaka Thursday evening. Over a dozen other members of Yunus's cabinet were also sworn in, including two students who led the uprising against Hasina, Nahid Islam and Asif Mahmood. Adilur Rahman Khan, a prominent Bangladeshi human rights advocate who was sentenced to 2 years in prison by Hasina's government, will also be an advisor to Yunus's interim government. Muhammad Yunus, known as the Banker of the Poor, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for his work developing microloans. For more, we'll go to Dhaka after headlines. In Tunisia, President Kais Saied has fired Prime Minister Ahmed Ghani, replacing him with Tunisia's social affairs minister just 1 year after Haqqani assumed the role. It's the latest shakeup by President Saied in what critics have labeled a constitutional coup and power grab. It comes ahead of Tunisia's October 6th presidential election, where Saied's top opponents have been jailed or barred from running. Earlier this week, five presidential candidates were sentenced to prison, including Abir Moussi, a prominent Saied critic, who was sentenced to 2 years on charges she insulted the Election Commission. In Japan, Nagasaki's commemorating 79 years since the U.S. dropped an atomic bomb on the Japanese city, killing an estimated 74,000 people just days after the U.S. killed 140,000 people when it dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima. This is Nagasaki Mayor Shiro Suzuki.
With no end in sight for Russia's conflict in Ukraine and fears that the violence in the Middle East may expand, we are currently faced with the possibility of losing the peace we have long taken for granted.
This year's ceremony was marked by a diplomatic row after Nagasaki's mayor declined to invite the Israeli ambassador. In protest, the U.S. ambassador, Rahm Emanuel, and other Western envoys boycotted the ceremony. In Thailand, the recently disbanded Move Forward opposition party has regrouped and announced it's now operating as the People's Party.
Without a doubt, we must win the 2027 election. In the next election, our goal is not just to be the leading party like in the 2023 election, but to win and form a single-party government. The term people in our party's name is not just a name. According to our slogan, by the people, for the people, we aim to create a country where ultimate power truly belongs to the people.
The anti-establishment youth-led Move Forward Party won the most seats last year in the election, but was blocked from taking power. Catalonia's parliament Thursday confirmed socialist Salvador Illa as head of Catalonia's new government, ending more than a decade of rule by the separatist movement. Illa is an ally of Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez. His election was said to be upstaged by the surprise vanishing of the Catalan separatist leader Carles Puigdemont after he spoke at a rally in Barcelona Thursday, then evaded arrest by fleeing to Belgium. Spanish authorities are demanding explanations from police about how Puigdemont was able to return to Catalonia and then go into exile again. In Venezuela, President Nicolas Maduro has blocked access to the ex-social media platform for 10 days amidst rising tensions over the disputed results of last month's presidential election. Maduro accused his rivals of weaponizing the platform against him and accused ex-owner Elon Musk of spreading hate. In other developments, Venezuela's Supreme Court found opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez, who claims he won the election, to be in contempt of court after he ignored a court summons mandating his presence for an audit of the election. This comes as Venezuela's top prosecutor is launching a criminal probe into Gonzalez and fellow opposition leader Maria Corina Machado after the pair called on the military to abandon its support for Maduro and stop cracking down on protesters. Meanwhile, Chile's president, Gabriel Boric, said he, quote, does not recognize Maduro's self-proclaimed victory. Back in the U.S., Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has called on Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell to resign over mishandling the fatal July shooting of Sonya Massey, a 36-year-old black woman. One of Campbell's deputies shot Massey in her own kitchen after she called 911 for help. Sean Grayson, who is white, has been charged with first-degree murder. This comes as newly released records show several emergency calls were made from Massey's home regarding her mental health in the days leading up to the fatal shooting. In one call to 911, Massey's mother, Donna Massey, reported her daughter was having a mental breakdown. Donna Massey goes on to tell the dispatcher, quote, I don't want you guys to hurt her, and said she feared a police officer who's prejudiced would be sent to her daughter's home. And today marks 10 years since the police killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. His death sparked an uprising led by the Black Lives Matter movement in Ferguson and across the country. Brown had graduated high school just 8 days before his killing. Brown's mother, Leslie McSpadden, was interviewed recently by GMA3, where she said she's still seeking justice for her son. This is part of that interview.
How would you like for your son, your baby, to be remembered?
As a great big brother, all of his siblings love him. He would have been a great contribution to this world had his time not been cut short.
Michael Brown was killed by white police officer Darren Wilson, but a grand jury and a federal investigation cleared Wilson. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell, who just defeated Congressmember Cori Bush in a closely watched primary, also refused in 2020 to press criminal charges against Darren Wilson. Today, the Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights Foundation is set to present Brown's case before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights on behalf of Brown's mother. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Nobel Peace Laureate Muhammad Yunus has been sworn in as head of Bangladesh's caretaker government just days after the ouster of Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, following weeks of student-led protests. Yunus, a longtime critic of Hasina, took the oath during a ceremony at the presidential palace in the capital, Dhaka, Thursday. Over a dozen other members of Yunus's cabinet were also sworn in, including two students who led the mobilizations forcing Hasina's resignation, Nahid Islam and Asif Mahmood. Adilur Rahman Khan, a prominent Bangladeshi human rights advocate who documented extrajudicial killings, forced disappearances, and police brutality, and was sentenced to 2 years in prison by Hasina's government, will also be an advisor to Yunus's interim government while Bangladesh prepares for new elections. Muhammad Yunus is known as the banker to the poor. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for his work developing microloans. On Thursday, Yunus spoke after landing in Dhaka and shared a message for Bangladesh's youth and students.
Using the means of revolution, Bangladesh will create its new dawn of victory. Keeping this vision ahead of us, we have to keep going ahead. I want to express my gratitude and praise the youths who've made this possible. They have protected this country and given it a rebirth, and we wish for this new Bangladesh to progress with speed. We have to protect this freedom. Not just protect it, we have to ensure that it reaches every single household. Otherwise, the freedom will have no meaning.
For more, we're joined by two guests. But we begin in Dhaka, the capital of Bangladesh, with Shahidul Alam, an acclaimed Bangladeshi photojournalist, author, and social activist who's documented human rights abuses, political and social movements. We welcome you to Democracy Now! In 2018, Bangladeshi police arrested Alam from his home over comments he made during an interview with Al Jazeera, critical of the government's violent response to nationwide student-led protests at the time. Alam was imprisoned for 107 days and reported being tortured by authorities. He was released following a global campaign by humanitarian groups, media, and journalists. In 2018, Alam was included in a group of journalists called The Guardians that Time magazine recognized as the Person of the Year. On the eve of Thursday's swearing-in, Alam shared a photo of Muhammad Yunus on X from when they met before the Nobel Peace Prize. Shahidul Alam, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Can you talk about the significance of this moment and what brought Bangladesh to this point where Muhammad Yunus, the man you photographed many years ago, is now the head of the caretaker government?
It's a phenomenal event. I mean, I've been through 1971, a war of liberation, and being in the streets on the 5th with people jubilating was a greater thrill than that time, which is difficult to imagine. But it is a difficult process. I mean, this is uncharted territory. The fact that the government has suddenly gone, and there was the few days in between when there wasn't a government, and that potentially and did to an extent lead to local violences, but that's been curbed, and we look forward to a new dawn ahead. I mean, this repression has taken such a toll on so many people for so long, the nation is just hugely relieved.
Tell us what happened. What led to the student-led uprising and why it was the students that took down the prime minister, Sheikh Hasina, who has now fled to India?
It was a people's movement, but triggered by the students. And their initial protest was about an unfair policy regarding government job allocations. But and that, I feel, could have been handled. Could have been handled well. But it was the arrogance of the tyrant that led to it. They wanted to meet the president. He didn't respond. She, in an interview, sneered at them, calling them razakas, which is a swear word here, because it talks about it's about collaborators of the Pakistani army. So essentially something going against our war of liberation, our freedom movement. And the students were enraged. Initially, one of the demands was that she apologize. But this prime minister, or the prime minister we had, is not the apologizing type. Instead, she turned her armed goons on them. They killed six people. When they wanted to bury these people, have a funeral, including there was one young man, Abu Saeed, who'd been shot at point blank by the police in a video that went viral. They instead turned really aggressive, and the police started killing, and eventually it just became a killing spree. So that lit the fuse completely, and then I don't think there was any going back.
Can you talk about your own experience, Shahidul Alam, being arrested under Sheikh Hasina's government? What happened back in 2018?
I wasn't arrested. I was picked up. It's ironically, it was on the very day, the 5th of August 2018, when they picked me up. And 6 years later, on the 5th of August, she fled. So there's an irony there. But yeah, again, it was a student protest. I'd been documenting it. On the 4th of August, again, the armed goons associated with the government attacked me, attacked my equipment. I was back in the streets on the 5th. That day, I gave an interview to Al Jazeera that night, sitting here in this flat. I was uploading material when the doorbell rang. I went to answer it, and suddenly these burly people came in. They dragged me away, handcuffed me, blindfolded me, put me in this microbus, and took me away. Now, I live in Bangladesh. I know what happened. So what I did was resist and scream as much as I could, so I didn't go away silently. That is one of the things that does happen in Bangladesh, disappearances, and then people just don't appear again. But that night, I was tortured. The following day, they offered me a deal saying if I agreed to stay quiet, I would be let go and there would be nothing on records. When I turned that down, they got very angry. I was taken to jail, to court. In court, I mentioned that I'd been tortured. And the court is required to investigate that. They did not, and put me into remand, which is a sort of euphemism in Bangladesh for state-sponsored torture. I was there for 6 days. Then I went to jail. Five bail attempts were refused. On the sixth, there was just so much pressure from people in Bangladesh and across the globe that eventually let me go. But even now, today, 6 years after the event, the trial has not begun. The charge sheet has not been placed. The law I was picked up under has been repealed. Yet I appear in court every month. I'm next due to appear on the 14th of August.
And have you spoken with Sheikh Hasina since then, the prime minister? And talk about her role in history, her father and Sheikh Hasina herself.
Well, her father led the movement. He was a principal architect of the movement towards liberation, and he was very revered initially. And then things went wrong. He began to get autocratic himself. He set up a private militia called Rukki Bahini. He disbanded all political parties and created a single-party state. except for four newspapers which were pro-government. All other newspapers were banned, and there was huge repression at that time. That was the first of the extrajudicial killings that we've had. He was assassinated on the 15th of August, 2015. And August is meant to be the month of mourning, officially called by the government, because his daughter, until recently, had been the prime minister. But the protesters have turned it around. I mean, July was when I was documenting, or at least the student protest began 6 years ago. Again, July was when the quota movement began this time. And they've called it the month, the red month. And instead of counting the days of August, they've extended July, and it's now a month of red. So that month of mourning has been turned into a month of revolution.
I wanted to go to a clip of Muhammad Yunus, who first joined Democracy Now! In 2008, not long after he won the 2006 Nobel Peace Prize for pioneering a microloan program that helped hundreds of thousands of impoverished Bangladeshis, mainly women. We also spoke to him in 2017 about his book, A World of Three Zeros, The New Economics of Zero Poverty, Zero Unemployment, and Zero Net Carbon Emissions. The book came out the same time as an Oxfam report, which found the eight richest men in the world own more wealth than half the world's population, more than 3.5 billion people. I asked Muhammad Yunus to talk about zero net carbon emissions and zero poverty.
But the system which we have been practiced, the capitalist system, I said capitalist system is not working towards it. It's a system which, as you mentioned, the eight people owning more wealth than the bottom 50% of the people. It's a system which is like a machine which is sucking up wealth from the bottom and transporting it to the top. So the top is becoming a big, big mushroom of wealth. And then 99% of the people is like the stem from the mushroom hanging there. And that stem is becoming thinner and thinner. The proportion, the wealth, portion of the wealth devoted to bottom 99%, or the 99%, we don't say bottom anymore, will become smaller. And relatively, the top becoming bigger and bigger. I said this is a ticking time bomb. Anytime it can explode politically, socially, economically, and so on, we are not paying attention to it. Wealth concentration was going on ever since we introduced capitalist system, but this was not very visible. Today, it's becoming worse and worse. The speed of wealth concentration has become speedier and speedier. Years back, there was a couple of years back, there were 32 people who owned half the wealth of the bottom 50%, and now we have eight. Soon we'll have five. Soon we'll have two people owning the whole entire world's wealth together. So those are the kind of things that threatening. If you when concentration of wealth takes place, it also the concentration of power. Wealth and power go together. So you control the government, you control the politics, you control the media, you control businesses, everything. So that's the kind of situation coming. And all the people at the bottom 10%, 20%, 50%, they will have tremendous anger against the way that's being done and how to express themselves. That will create the digestibility in the society.
That's Muhammad Yunus taking on capitalism on Democracy Now! In 2017, now just sworn in as the interim head of Bangladesh after a student-led uprising. In addition to Shahid Al-Alam, we're joined by Nusrat Chaudhry, associate professor of anthropology at Amherst College, author of Paradoxes of the Popular, Crowd Politics in Bangladesh. Professor, you grew up in Bangladesh. You're speaking to us, though, from Northampton, Massachusetts. If you can comment on what Muhammad Yunus was saying then, presumably what he believes today, and what that could mean for the future, not only of Bangladesh, but as a world leader for the world.
Thank you. I think one of the things that made Yunus come back and take on this position is the fact that the students really wanted him as the head of the interim government. And one of the reasons for that is that most people in Bangladesh are wary and weary of party politics. So one of the reasons why this particular student protest and the ones that have been successful in the past succeeded, albeit at a very steep cost, is because it didn't start with any particular political party affiliation. The students were very clear from the beginning. They said that if you are a student, you can join us, but don't come here as a representative of any political party. And in a place like Bangladesh, it's difficult to find people who have kind of wide acceptance, who enjoy wide acceptance and recognition from